That song right there was Shane by Fruit Bats, wasn't it, Ben?
It was.
You want to say anything else?
That we are not alone in the studio today. It's time for the favorite, my favorite part of the week, as I said last week. The Scorpio Book interview. Hello, kia ora, hi.
Hello, nice to be here.
Sorry, I'm like so entranced. I thought Josh was doing the intro, but I'm researching the book.
It's almost like I told you to do the intro.
I'm researching the book, so I'm like...
Oh, yeah, excuses. Anyway, how's it going? How are you?
I'm great. Thanks,
wonderful.
Josh.
And what are we talking about today?
So I'm here to talk about American writer Kylie Reid's debut novel, Such a Fun Age, which was published earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a social drama that calls into question the best intentions of privileged white America.
Ooh.
And I chose this one because I couldn't put it down. I read it in two ravenous sittings.
Oh, wow.
Actually, okay, so I put it down once just to sleep. But it's a debut that's attracted huge attention this year. It's what's known in the publishing world as a super lead, which is a ridiculous term. But it was bought in a 10-way auction, and film and TV rights were quickly snapped up.
Wow.
And it will no doubt be a film starring someone like Reese Witherspoon before too long. And this industry excitement was recently matched by critical acclaim when it was announced as being on the Booker Prize long list for 2020 a few weeks ago.
Nice.
So, what's it about? It starts with a bang. It's set in 2015, pre-Trump America.
Mm-hmm.
Amira is 25 years old and working as a babysitter for the white upper middle class Chamberlain family. She's out partying with friends on a Friday night when she gets a call after 10 p.m. from her boss, Alex Chamberlain, who says there's been an incident at the house and can Amira come over and take two-year-old Briar just down to the supermarket while the police are here so she's not in the way and doesn't get upset.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Amira says, okay, sure, but she's out at a party and she's had a few drinks and she's certainly not dressed for babysitting. And the mother says, don't worry, it's fine, just come, I'll pay you double. So it turns out to have been a minor incident. An egg was thrown at their front window and it smashed. But still, the police are there and it's a bit hectic. So that's how this young black woman finds herself late at night in the supermarket that stocks bone broth, truffle butters and kombucha with a white two-year-old. So they're quietly hanging out, sniffing the different teas, having a little dance in the frozen food aisle, as you do with a toddler, when a security guard approaches them because another shopper has pointed out that it seems very strange for such a young girl to be out so late with someone who's clearly not her mother.
Mm.
So things quickly become heated when the security guard refuses to let Amira leave, the implication being that she might have kidnapped this girl.
Goodness.
And so another shopper whips out his phone and starts recording the incident as a means of defending Amira. But the situation only de-escalates when Amira calls Briar's father and he arrives to confirm that she is, in fact, the babysitter.
Mm.
So we start out with this blatantly racist event.
Yeah.
But the real subject of the book is the far more slippery and insidious racism that unfolds after the fact through the actions of mostly well-intentioned white and black people as the rest of the novel plays out.
Yeah.
So there's this whirlwind of advice and indignation that gets stirred up on Amira's behalf and useless knee-jerk reactions like the security guard should be fired, boycott the store, put the video on social media, lawyer up and sue the supermarket. But Amira wants none of these things. She just wants to move on with her life and sort out what in her eyes is the far bigger issue at hand. She's about to turn 26, and in the US, that means getting kicked off your parents' health insurance. Reid creates this palpable tension around Amira's financial insecurity and the precarious position she's in without a real job. So we have this strong sense of panic that the window is rapidly closing on Amira, and there's no safety net beneath her. But there's nothing she really wants to do or is very good at apart from looking after this gorgeous little girl, Briar, who she's formed a really strong and quite beautiful bond with.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, the other main character in the novel is Briar's mother and Emira's boss, Alix Chamberlain, or Alix, as she affectedly calls herself. And the story toggles between her and Emira's point of view.
Mm. Oh, cool.
So, Alix is an ambitious woman in her 30s who was on the cusp of having a successful career as a social media influencer in New York.
Oh, yes.
But her career stalls when she has her second child and the family moves to Philadelphia. So in New York, she'd built herself up as this pseudo female empowerment lifestyle brand.
Oh, yeah. I can picture it.
Yeah. That sort of encourages women to speak up and lean in and, you know, which is all great. But we quickly come to see that she's more mercenary than genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this really icky scene where she appears on a discussion panel and she's manipulated her baby's breastfeeding routine so she can feed her on stage as a publicity stunt.
Eesh.
Oh, which is, yeah.
Not the
she's
best.
She's really desperate to be noticed by Hillary Clinton's campaign, which she just so wants to be a part of, not for any political reasons.
Just for the clout.
Because it fits her image.
Yeah.
So she's kind of this pretty awful, affluent white woman who's used her privilege as leverage to build this have-it-all feminist brand. Yeah. But her readiness to use people and general lack of integrity is kind of sickening and only gets worse as the novel unfolds and her past catches up with her. So after Alix's news anchor husband stumbles into a dreadful racial slur on air, which is why the house was egged in the first place, Alix becomes almost obsessed with making Emira part of her family, which Emira has very little interest in. Like, she's close to Briar.
But she's like, this is a job.
Exactly. It's at best sort of an awkward business transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So she's almost blind to Alix's gestures of friendship, but the less interest she shows in Alix's overtures, the more fixated Alix becomes on winning her.
Mm.
And the harder she tries, the more fumbling and uncomfortable it becomes. Alix is just working so hard to portray herself as this liberal, middle-class feminist with black friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Emira's just delightfully oblivious. And then there's the video of the original supermarket incident shot by the well-meaning bystander.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
That smoulders away beneath the book as the storyline goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say any more. There's heaps more to it, but there's a huge twist in the middle that turns everything on its head.
Oh, goodness.
We love a twist.
I know.
How could you do this to me?
Yeah, it takes the book to really interesting places.
Well, now I need it.
Yeah, of course.
I have no choice.
Yeah. So even though this book is set pre-Trump, it feels very of the moment.
Yeah.
There's been a lot written on liberal racism in recent years.
Mm.
A lot of nonfiction, like Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race.
Yeah.
How to Be Anti-Racist, White Supremacy and Me. So it's really great to see this tricky topic being teased
out. Yeah, it's really interesting.
In
I feel
fiction.
Like I've been seeing a lot recently about like, you know, sure, like, liberals sound well-meaning, but what are they actually doing?
Yeah.
Like, there was a photo of, or a video with Elizabeth Warren doing a speech, and in the background, she had, like, you know, three things that spelt out BLM, and all these people were like, amazing! And other people were like, this
nothing.
Is nothing.
It was boring.
She's
lip
doing
service.
Nothing. This is so lip service.
So
like, what is she accomplishing except for a few people are going to notice it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah. And I have to say that as a white middle class mother, I felt extremely uncomfortable identifying to some extent with some of the cringeworthy moments in the book, but in a really good way, you know, like, oh God, that's awful, but I needed to hear that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it isn't just a book about race. It's about motherhood, friendship, love, class. And that's just one of the things that I liked about this book, that you think it's going in a certain direction and then it suddenly does a U-turn and surprises you.
Very multifaceted.
Yeah. So it's also very cinematic in the way scenes unfold. There's lots of action, lots of dialogue, which Reed does absolutely brilliantly, from the toddler's delightful babbling non sequiturs to African-American vernacular, to the way middle-class white women talk to their kids. It's all brilliantly observed.
Yeah.
And Briar is one of the most convincing children I've read in a long time.
Cool. So,
that's really cool. Yeah, I feel like sometimes you get a weird mix of children. It's either like
they're
the dumbest things ever that understand nothing.
Or just or really like, sweet.
Yeah, or they're really sweet. Yeah. Or they're like geniuses at age three. You know, it's like there's never a good middle.
Anyway, we are short on time, so if we could like what are the
totally.
Final words,
because
I want to hear all about this book, but unfortunately
final words. So let me see, what am I gonna say? So the character of Alex in particular, she is crafted so brilliantly. So we're given these wonderfully precise, subtle details that just speak volumes. So, like, there's one point where she's talking on the phone to a friend and she swears in front of her kids, and her first reaction is to check around to see if anyone's heard her rather than say, you know, don't say that word at school or whatever. Yeah, so she's not a wholly unsympathetic character, though. She's lonely. She's finding it difficult to juggle work and family. She feels like she's failing. She loves her kids, but she's not a natural mum. And we almost come to pity her for her privilege because it isolates her and she can't even see how badly she's behaving.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, her character shows how not being racist isn't just about being a good person and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It's racism starts with an inability to see yourself and acknowledge yourself as a product of a racist world.
Yeah, definitely.
So I loved that this is a novel that tackles big, important issues, but it's not heavy or ponderous or depressing or overly earnest. It's quick and delightful and completely entertaining, even when it's making you squirm with discomfort. So the characters are very real, beautifully uncomplicated, and it leaves you with a lot to think about, but ultimately, it's a rollicking, fast-paced read and a very strong debut. I highly recommend it, especially for book clubs.
Uh-huh.
There's lots to talk about in there. Also, for anyone who enjoyed Celeste Ng's Little Fires Everywhere, that's been made into a miniseries. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Kylie Reid is definitely one to watch.
Awesome. Kylie Reid, such a fun age. Thank you, Val, for being in the studio, as per usual.
Anytime. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.
Woohoo!
Bye.